would like in a secretary. And before he comes up, I couldn't help but wonder, since Kirk now has his own business, if he has office hours posted on his door, and if his office hours would happen to say, open most days about 9 or 10, occasionally as early as 7, but sometimes as late as 12 or 1. We close about 4:30 or 5, but sometimes as late as 5:30. Some days we may not be here at all. But lately, we've been here just about all the time, except when we're someplace else. But we should be here then, too. Kirk, come up and share with us.
She doesn't know it, but those are my hours, myself. Where's Carolyn? Is she here? Is that about right? Now, I'll tell you, my secretary works part-time. She's supposed to be there at 9, and she works till 3:30. And she gets there about 8:15. I mean, really, just great. I think she's bucking for a raise or something. I don't know. I appreciate what Randy Imes shared. When I was a kid, I went to Eagle Lake. I did not know they just started it in 57, which sounds like a long time ago, but when I was a kid, that was not a long time ago. And I went there 4 years. I went from 61 through 64. And that's all. At that time, you couldn't go till you were 11, and you were finished when you were 14. And I went those 4 years, and it was a great camp. And so if you have a son or a daughter that is anywhere in those age brackets, 8 to 18, is that the years? It's a great deal. It is, I thought it was 6. It's 8 miles up the canyon. And they did walk us up there twice during those years, hiked up the canyon instead of driving us. Not to go to camp. We didn't have to carry our bedrolls, but we did. Sometimes we'd hike down and then hike back up. I don't know if they let you do that anymore. Hike up to Eagle Lake, do they? But if you want to go out this afternoon and have a nice little 8-hour hike, you can do that. Carolyn asked me to speak on the topic, what every boss wants in a secretary, and I think I was confused or distracted or something. I agreed to speak on that. Like I said yesterday, you'll commit to almost anything 8 or 9 months out. And by the way, if you're tired today, some of them told me at breakfast they wanted to take a nap, feel free, just spread out, y'all move. And if I lose too many of you, I'll have you stand up and we'll do all that. But, just make yourself at home. If I get tired, I'll do the same. But she wanted me to speak on what every boss wants in a secretary. So I thought, and so then lately, I've been thinking about it. What am I going to say? And I decided that I have no idea what every boss wants in a secretary. So we've got a break now, don't we, Carol? But I thought, initially I thought, man, I can handle that. I've been a boss all my working life. I've had a lot of secretaries work for me. I've had a few good ones work for me. I've had a much larger number than that either they were not right for me or they were not right for the job or I was not right for them. But I've had some who were great. They were fast workers. They were quick learners. Great to get along with. A boss's dream. You know, it's been said of a secretary, or said of a wife, that she will either double a man's effectiveness or she'll cut it in half. And I think the same thing is true of a secretary. But I really can't tell you today what every boss wants in a secretary, because bosses are a diverse bunch, aren't they? There are some bosses that are perfect. Oh, and by the way, when I was preparing this, I had no idea it was church secretaries I was speaking to. And I was going to put in a disclaimer that I'm going to call the boss he and the secretary she. And I'd say, judging from this crowd, I'm fairly accurate in using those pronouns. But some are good bosses. You know, they're brilliant but humble. There are some bosses who are great success in their field, but easygoing about it. Some bosses who are able to handle a high-stress job, but never get never blow their cool, never get short-tempered. Bosses who are a financial wizard, but generous with their money. A boss who's the type of guy that always gets the job done, but is never overly demanding. Some bosses are like that. But some bosses are more like one of my favorite characters of history, Winston Churchill. I read a book a couple of years ago, The Last Lion, a biography of Churchill by William Manchester. Has anyone read that? Got a lot of great history buffs here in the crowd. Let me read you some what y'all have heard of Winston Churchill. You know, England, World War II, all that stuff. Never, never, never. Let me read you what Manchester says about Churchill here. It would be pleasant to report that his relationship with his staff is genial. We looking all right there, Shelley? Shelley's a 2020 reporter, really. She's been going in all the rooms taking videos. It would be pleasant to report that his relationship with his staff is genial, that he treats them as he would his daughters, and that he's particularly patient with his new secretaries. In fact, he is nothing of the sort. He treats them like servants. He's an atrocious taskmaster. His attitude toward his employees, any of y'all work for a guy like this, is difficult to understand or at times even to excuse. He can summon each of his pets by name, recite poetry by the hour, remember the exact circumstances under which he learned of a certain event 50 years earlier, but he knows the names of only two or three of his 18 servants and stenographers. They are called by him the tall miss with blue eyes or the man with ginger hair. Newcomers find his lisp an obstacle. They simply do not understand what he's saying. Now, you got to know, Churchill would work in the middle of the night. He would start somewhere around midnight, and he would dictate for hours. And he had these stenographers just come in one after another trying to keep up with him. And he had a lisp, and he was hard to understand. They simply do not understand what he's saying, but he makes no allowance for that. He rages and stamps his feet. Foot stamping is his outlet with women, a substitute for obscenities. If only men were present, he would cut loose with a string of short Anglo-Saxon oaths, mostly beginning, as he once put it, with the earlier letters of the alphabet. Once, one of his stenographers stood up to him. There was a blazing row. At the end of it, Churchill, his lower lip jutting, said, "You were very rude to me, you know." The stenographer, still seething, replied, "Yes, but you were rude too." Churchill grumbled, "Yes, but I am a great man." Ooh, we struck a sensitive nerve here. Churchill's home was Chartwell. That was the name of his home. At Chartwell, this was the last word. Later, this stenographer would say, "There was no answer to that. He knew, as I and the rest of the world knew, that he was right." Well, you may work for a guy like Winston Churchill. I don't know. But I imagine your boss is somewhere between the two extremes that I've just mentioned. Your boss may be more like the one described in the definition of an executive. An executive is one who talks with the visitors so that everyone else can do the work. So I'm going to change the title of the talk just a little bit, and I'm not going to talk about what every boss wants in a secretary. I'm going to talk about what every boss should want in a secretary. And we're going to look at both sides of the relationship. We're going to look at what, as a secretary, you ought to be able to expect in a boss. And then secondly, and we'll spend more time on what a boss should be able to expect from you as a secretary. It's been said that an employer generally gets exactly the kind of employees that he deserves. And so first, you agree with that? An employer gets exactly the kind of employees he deserves. So first, let's look at what you should be able to expect from your boss. And, you know, even though most of you are church secretaries, I've joked with some of you this week, and I know that pastors are just like anyone else. In fact, they're worse a lot of times. But the principles are the same whether we're talking about a wholesale business like I've been in or a real estate investment company or a church. The principles of relating with your boss and him relating with the secretary are the same no matter where we are. And you're going to love my first point here. First point that you should be able to expect from your boss is that you should expect that your boss is going to pay you what you're worth. Now, it's rougher in a church because you got committees. And just when you get one committee lined out, they switch committee members. In James 5:4, the Bible says that, "Behold, the wages of the laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, cry out. And the cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord of hosts." Proverbs 16:11 says, "The Lord demands fairness in every business deal." He established this principle. Proverbs 16:11. And, you know, God expects for me as an employer to pay my people a wage that, which fairly reflects their contribution to the business or to the church or to the company. Very few people are worth very much at the beginning. When you start in a new job, did you catch that? Very few people are worth very much at the beginning. When you start in a new job, you don't know the ropes, you don't know how to run all the machinery, you don't know the procedures in the office. Generally, you're inexperienced at what you're doing in that particular job. And so there's a sense in which the company overpays a new employee. And they're overpaying that knowingly as an investment in the future of that employee, in the future of the company, an investment in that person. But then there comes a time when that employee has begun to earn what they're worth, and as their contribution to the overall effort goes up, then their compensation needs to go up. When you're looking at pay, though, don't fall into the trap of just looking at your take-home pay. In our wholesale company, we had about 200 employees, and one time, about 4 or 5 years ago, we had a union try to get in. And I did battle with the Teamsters. That was a real sight. A lot of fun, really. You know, there's a lot of, I don't know if any of y'all are Teamsters, but there's a lot of things you can do to have fun with the Teamsters. But so we had kind of a campaign going for a while. We won. But I found out that my people did not know what we were paying them. I would say, "What do you make?" And they would tell me what their take-home check is. And yet we did some surveys and we found out that in most of our people, their take-home pay was 75 to 80% of their gross pay. And I cannot be held responsible for what the government does to you. I don't like it either. But we provided benefits that they didn't really see. Things like health care, retirement contributions, paid days off, sending their kids to Eagle Lake, we do that. Things like that, we provided benefits that added up to 35% of their gross pay. And they didn't even realize it. So what they were costing me was almost twice what they stuck in their pocket to take home. And once they understood that, they looked at things differently. So don't fall in the trap of just looking at your take-home pay. I had a girl who started with us. She was with us 9 years. She was a good girl. She started as a receptionist, then later she was my secretary and a good secretary. And then she became office manager. I've noticed a tendency in people that the longer they're with you, there's a tendency that their performance can cap out on their job. And there's a tendency toward ingratitude on their part. Well, this gal, 1 year, I told her, I said, "You know how much you're making?" She goes, "No." She gave me some figure. And I told her, I said, "No, this year you're going to make over a certain figure." And it's a good pay for an office manager. And she goes, "Really?" And so then later on, after the end of that year, she came to me one day mad. And she said, "You lied to me." Now, I'm a great guy, but when someone says that I lied to them, that raises my hackles a little bit. She goes, "You lied to me." I said, "What do you mean? You told me I was going to make such and such last year. I said, "You did." She goes, "No, I didn't." Well, it just so happens that I had looked at the computer a day or two prior to that and had happened to look at her pay because I wanted to see what she'd made. I knew she was going to make it, but I wanted to see the exact figure. And it was well over the amount I'd said. I said, "Well, let's walk over to the computer and see." And so I knew her number and put it in. It pops up on the screen. She goes, "There, that's what I made." And she points at her take-home pay. I said, "Well, you remember the two different bonuses we gave you during the year, cash bonuses?" "Oh, I forgot about those." "Well, that's $3,000 or $4,000. "Do you remember the $2,000 on the interest-free loan that we forgave that year?" "Oh, I forgot about that." "You remember the 15% of your pay that we put in the retirement fund?" "Oh, no, I forgot about that." I said, "Let me tell you something. Don't you ever accuse me of lying to you unless you have the facts." Now, my theory has always been to be generous with my people. And my theory has always been to pay them more than people are making in comparable jobs in competitive companies. And the reason is because I want better people than my competitors. And I want to be able to expect more from them than other people are expecting. By the way, that gal, after I brought another guy in as vice president of operations, and I really believe the company had grown beyond her ability in that job. And she was a girl that was very close with my family and very close with my brothers and their families, and really felt like she was a member of the family and maybe owned a piece of the business. And after this other man came in as vice president, finally, he had to let her go. And I was the one she blamed for it. And I wrote her a letter, and I said, I told her, I said, if she wants to talk to me, you tell her I'll see her. And she didn't want to talk to me, but then later she accused me of not being willing to see her when they let her go. And I wrote her a letter, and I said, I hope someday we can be friends again. Because we had been very close. In fact, I'm going to talk about this later, but probably too close. And we are good friends again. Later on, she called me about a matter, wanting to get something cleared up. And we came and talked for a long time. We've talked several times since then. And last fall was my 40th birthday party. I had a big 40th birthday party. We had about 200 guests, a friend and I, both turned 40 the same week. We had about 200 guests at the nicest hotel in town and had a rock and roll band. The Navigators don't do that, but business people can. And a comedian come in from Dallas, and we had a big time, and she came to my birthday party. But your boss needs to pay you what you're worth. Second, your boss should make you feel that you're important. He should let you know that what you're doing is important to the organization. But in doing that, he needs to motivate you both positively and negatively. Now, what I mean by that is, positively, some bosses are just positive about everything. They're just bubbling over all the time. It's as if you can do no wrong. And they almost become a cheerleader. And I don't think that's proper for a boss. I think when he gives you a compliment, it ought to really mean something. Not just something that goes right over your head as if it's meaningless. That would be if he motivated you only positively. But if he motivates you only negatively, he's the guy, which there's more like these, you'd probably love a cheerleader. The negative boss is the guy, the only time you hear from him is when you mess up. He doesn't care about the 99.4% of the time that you do it right. But you mess up, you're going to hear from it, from him. Well, the answer is for the boss to be balanced. Like to do, when I have to cover something negative with somebody, I try to tell them about something they've done well at the same time. So balance it. But a boss should motivate his people so that they never become complacent. Like I mentioned earlier, it seems that people, if they stay in the same job doing the same tasks for 4 years and 5 years and longer, they can become complacent. In fact, some people will feel like just because they did something good this week, then they should be able to get away with murder next week. Or just because they did something good this year, then they're set for life. And the world's just not that way. And we can't allow our people to become complacent. So he needs to pay you what you're worth. He needs to let you know of your value, your importance of what you're doing to the organization. And then third, your boss needs to let you think for yourself. Now this is my greatest weakness. Carolyn can tell you, probably, if she gets mean, and she doesn't get mean very often, that's probably my greatest weakness, because I want things to be done right. And so I have a tendency to over-control. But what I continue to try to learn is to give people a project and let them do the project. Carolyn is terribly creative. That's probably the wrong modifier there. Very creative. She is. She's the most creative person I know. And if a boss stifles her, he's just going to take all the creativity out of her. And you're probably, a lot of you are the same way. And you wish your boss would give you a little more rope to deal with. When I'm thinking right, someone comes to me with a question, they say, what should we do about such and such? Well, the easiest thing for me to do is tell them what I think. But the right thing for me to do is to say, well, what do you think? And in fact, then tell them, now listen, when you have a problem, do not come to me. In fact, the way I would put it was, hey, don't interrupt me until you put your brain in gear. You know, that's my nice side. But if she can't solve it herself, she ought to come to me and say, I've got this problem now. I could do this, this, or this, and I recommend we do this one. And most of the time I say, that's great. And sooner or later, she's going to quit interrupting me with it. She's just going to handle it. And she'll do her job, and I'll do my job. In fact, sometimes I say, well, what would you do if I wasn't here? They go, what do you mean? Well, let's suppose I dropped dead. Would you just never finish this project, or would you handle it? Well, really, that's the way we ought to look at it. He needs to let you think for yourself, and then your boss should separate the office life from the social life. And this is what I mentioned earlier. You know, there are some obvious problems that Carolyn's alluded to. Carol, you were great on sex last night. I'll tell you. It was worth the trip. And I'll tell you, I don't know about the rest of you, but I am convinced. I know men do not understand women a bit. And I am further convinced that women have no understanding of what makes men tick. If your husband or your pastor tells you that he is not bothered or tempted by things that he visually sees, that son of a gun has either had his heart stopped or he's a liar. And, you know, that's just the way men are. Men are different than you. Now, I'm glad that you guys are different. I like the difference. I really do. But that was great last night. But there's some problems in a relationship between a boss and a secretary, and I'm sure this is true even in the church, in getting too close. It causes some business problems and causes some personal problems as well. But if you let a professional relationship cross over into a social relationship, sooner or later the social relationship is going to bring pressure to bear on the professional relationship. If I get too close to my secretary, and I'm in a large organization, right now I'm in a two-person company, but in an organization with 200 people, if I get too close to my secretary or any other employees, then they're going to feel like they're a special case. They're going to feel like the rules don't apply to them. They're going to feel like this girl I mentioned, that they're a member of the family. They own a piece of the business. And they're going to get offended when we don't treat them differently than we treat other people. And we can't afford to treat them differently. If I have 200 employees, I can't afford to radically treat one differently than I do the others. And it'll ultimately lead to discontentment on her part. So I need to separate my professional life from my social life. Well, that's what you should be able to expect in a boss. Fair pay, fair recognition, fair respect for your own intellect and him letting you think for yourself, and then a separation of the professional life from the social life. What do I expect in a secretary? What I expect in a secretary centers in two areas. First, her aptitude, and second, her attitude. Both are important. I want a secretary with the right aptitude. I want one who's well-suited for the job. Now, I don't know if you're well-suited for the job you're in or not, but I can tell you that I've had more people try who are not well-suited than who are, quite frankly. And it never works out. See, we're all gifted in certain ways. I happen to be gifted in doing numbers. I mean, if I took an aptitude test for doing math, I would rate in the 99th percentile, literally. But I'm not motivated to do numbers full time. If you put me over in a corner of an office and said, Kirk, you're gifted at doing numbers, so we want you to do numbers for the rest of your life. We want you to add, subtract, multiply, divide, and do all these columns of numbers. I'd get bored stiff in about 30 seconds. Now, if you held a gun to my head, and that was the motivation, then I'd say, well, great, man, I'll do numbers. But the minute you turned your back, I'd quit doing numbers. Well, I need a secretary who's gifted in the areas I need her to be gifted in, and she's motivated in those areas. She needs to be gifted and motivated. One of the biggest mistakes that I ever made as an employer was made with my brother-in-law, my sister's husband. Great guy. Carolyn, do you know Randy? Great guy. You all would love him five times as much as you like me, if you do at all. But he's a people person. Well, in our wholesale business, we were a nuts and bolts kind of deal. And so we decided that we would hire Randy let him learn the business, and then he can make all this money in the wholesale business. So we put him out on a route, driving a truck, doing sales, calling on stores. It takes a lot of detail work, a lot of paperwork. Randy was great with the customers. They loved him. He was terrible with the managers because he didn't do his paperwork right. Well, I'm slow. After about 2 years, we figured, why is not Randy progressing? And so I hired a Christian psychologist to come in and spend a day with Randy and talk to Randy and study Randy and tell us what Randy's gifts and motivations were. And this guy gave us an interesting report. He said, Kirk, if you were trying to pick the job in the whole world that is worst suited for Randy, it'd be the one he's in. That's what he said. Well, Randy was relieved. Randy had been trying hard. But if you're in the wrong job and you're trying hard, it just doesn't work. And so I had to talk to my brother-in-law and say, Randy, you're just not going to make it in this business. It's just wrong for you. Now, we'll work out a financial deal to where it doesn't work a hardship on you. We'll move you back to where you came from. Anywhere you want to go, we'll move you there and pay you for it. And we did. And today our relationship is great. Our kids play together and we see each other. Randy's happy. Randy is now in Christian counseling. He's doing a great job. And so we made a mistake with Randy because his natural gifts did not suit the job. I want a secretary whose gifts suit the job. Now, different secretarial jobs require different gifts. You may be a great secretary for one executive, and your gifts do not suit the needs of a different type of secretarial job. They're not just homogeneous, are they? Some require great aptitude with numbers. If you're a financial secretary, you'd better have that. Others require a person who meets people well. I imagine the pastor secretary had better meet people well. She's got to handle some difficult situations. I was a buyer for many years, and that required a certain kind of secretary to work with our vendors and work with the computer and so on. Some jobs require great typing skills, and others require none at all. Some jobs require a great high degree of comfort with a computer and learning new computer programs like WordPerfect or a spreadsheet or a new accounting program, and others require no computer skills at all. So she needs to be somebody that suits my job as far as her gifts and her motivations, the right aptitude. Second part of having the right aptitude is she needs to be a learner. I've noticed that in offices, things change. The machinery we work with changes. The computer programs we work with change. She needs to be able and willing to adapt to change, to be a learner. A number of years ago, one Friday morning, a young man from Stanford University went in to apply for a job. And the boss said, well, I don't know if I have anything for you. The only job I have is as a stenographer. And the young man said, I'll tell you, I can't start today on Friday, but I can start Tuesday if you'll give me the job. And so the boss said, okay, see you Tuesday morning. So Tuesday morning, the young man showed up for the job, and the boss said, hey, let me ask you something. Why could you not start Friday or on Monday? Why'd you have to wait till Tuesday? And the young man said, well, I had to go and rent a typewriter and take it home all weekend and teach myself how to type. And the young man later became known as President Herbert Hoover. But he wanted the job, and he was willing to learn. And as the world continues to change, we need to all be learners. Third part of having the right aptitude is an ability to take care of details. I know of no secretarial job that's not going to demand that you can take care of details. The secretary should be able to take care of the routine things so that I am freed up to maximize the use of my time. Carolyn used to be secretary for John Crawford. John was not known as Mr. Warm Fuzzy here at Glen Eyrie. He was a real taskmaster. Now, I've heard it said, and she doesn't remember this, but I've heard it said that when he got ready to go out of town, he expected to pick up his briefcase and walk out of the door, and everything that needed to be in it was supposed to be in it, taking care of details. But she told me, when I asked her, she goes, well, I don't remember that, but I do remember that he expected me to have his travel itinerary memorized. He wanted to know when the plane took off here, when it landed in San Francisco, and I was supposed to know those. And so she asked him, well, John, how Can I know those things? He said, memorize them. John wanted Carolyn to take care of details. But I want my secretary to take care of details. I want to make an airplane reservation months ahead of time, and when I walk out the door for that trip, I expect for her to say, here are your tickets. And if I ask her today, tomorrow morning, I'm leaving. I don't want her to know the whole itinerary, but if I'm leaving tomorrow morning, it's important whether it's 6:30 or 10:30. And so I'll say, what time is that flight tomorrow? And she'll say, it's 10:30. She should know that. I want her to know when I give her a stack of bills and she writes the checks and I sign them, I want her to know that there's enough money in the bank. If there's not, then take care of it. Now, she doesn't have to manufacture it, but she knows where to get it. As I'm walking out the door to go to lunch, and I'm just about to walk out and forget an appointment, I expect for her to say, Kirk, do you remember that you have lunch with so-and-so? I expect for her to take care of those details. I expect for her to take care of all the details involved in running the office. Now, just to keep an office running, you've got to have a lot of supplies in the right quantity at the right time. I expect for her to have enough copy paper. I expect for her to have ice made. I expect for her to have the right kind of soft drinks in the refrigerator. I expect for her to have supplies of things like ribbons and envelopes and stationery and postage, spare cartridges for the laser printer on the computer. There's nothing worse, folks, than me being there after she's gone home for the weekend. And I'm speaking tomorrow morning in a church somewhere, and I've got to leave tonight. And I'm trying to run off the handout at the last minute because I don't plan ahead. I pay others to do that. And the computer printer is out of toner, and there's no spare. And so I expect for her to have spares on that. I expect for her to think ahead and take care of all the details. That's her job. I expect for her to be well-organized and self-disciplined. I expect for her files to be organized so that she can find things. And some logic so that if she's gone, I can get in there and find what I need. That's really frustrating. Now, it may frustrate you to dig into your boss's files. If that's true, you just straighten them out. I expect for her to come to work on time. I expect for her to take care of her routine duties, her recurring monthly, weekly, whatever duties, on schedule. If we have certain payments we're supposed to mail every month, I want those to be done. I don't want to keep track of her. It's her job to keep track of me. And, you know, my reputation, for instance, I borrow a lot of money from a banker to buy some buildings. And every month I'm going to get in a rent check from my tenant, and I've got to pay a mortgage payment to the banker. My reputation depends on those two things happening. And I don't want to have to think about it. I expect her to think. In fact, I told Carolyn when she was my secretary, she'll probably remember this. We had a payment to a bank. It was $55,000 a month that we had to make. And I said, Carolyn, that payment shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write it on the doorpost of your house and on the gates. You don't even have to write it on a list. You just think of it every day. It's today the day to make that payment. You remember that? But I want her to take care of those things. There's a luncheon group I meet with once a month, and we have to send out a reminder a week ahead of time. I expect for her to have that on a calendar and get it out without me reminding her. I expect for her to think ahead and know her schedule and my schedule so that we don't find ourselves with me out of town, not able to sign checks because they weren't written ahead of time when those monthly payments come due. So I want her to have the right aptitude. Is there anyone here who dare apply for a job with me at this point? Second, I want her to have the right attitude. I want her overriding desire to be to please me. In fact, when I hired my current secretary, I gave her a four-word job description. Your job is to make my life easier. Now, whatever that is, make my life easier. That can mean many things. That can mean making sure that the money's put in the bank when it comes in. That can mean making sure that the bills get paid on time that need to be paid. That can mean running errands for me, picking my kids up at school. That can mean taking my car to the shop to get worked on. Take it to the car wash to get it filled up and washed. Now, we don't use the wand. We use the one where they drive it through, you know. The man drives it through. The machine takes it through. I expect for her to run errands, pick up prescriptions for me, to go get my shaver fixed. When someone tells me that, you should really read this book. Carolyn asked me yesterday. She went in my room and she goes, "Oh, where'd you get this book?" She goes, "I've been looking everywhere for that. Where'd you get it?" I said, "I don't know. Sherry got it for me. Because someone told me I should read it. I wrote it on a piece of paper. I threw it in Sherry's file with things to do. She found it. I don't have to worry about that." Now, some of these tasks you would consider menial. But I don't ask my secretary to do anything that I don't do myself. On a regular basis. The key is that when she takes care of these things for me, many times without me ever thinking of it, it frees me up to do other things. A number of years ago in western Oklahoma, this is during the Depression when jobs were hard to find, a man went to apply for a job running a variety store, or working at a variety store, five and dime store. And so the owner of the store, this man said, "I'll do anything if you give me a job." And so the owner of the store said, "Fine, here's my keys. Take my car and wash it." Now, this was in the days before the automatic car washer, even the spray wand. That meant he had to go out, hook up the garden hose, get dirty, scrub the car off, dry it, and so on. And the guy says, "Okay." And he went and washed the boss's car, brought the car back clean, and the boss said, "Okay, you've got a job." Now, that's a man who wanted a job so much that he was willing to do even a dirty job. Now, I've never asked my secretary to do that. But I want her overriding desire to be to please me. This involves several things. One is, I want a secretary, part of the right attitude is I want her to have a pleasant personality. When I checked references on my present secretary, the thing I got back from all the references was, "Oh, everybody loved her." And she's that kind of guy. She has a great personality. When she has a bad day, I have to dig it out of her. I do not want her to treat me like I'm an intrusion when she's working on something and I walk up and give her something else. You know, if you're the type of person who cannot handle interruptions well, you might as well get another job. It's almost as if the equation were secretarial job equals interruptions. You're going to be interrupted by phone calls, by visitors, by calls into the boss's office, running errands for the boss, and if you can't handle them well, you need to move on to something else. Now, I do need to be clear with my secretary as far as what my priorities are, because I throw a project on her, and then right in the middle of that, she's working hard on it. I say, "Oh, let's do this." And I need to prioritize things and let her know what's most important on my list, but then she needs to adapt to that. She needs a pleasing personality. I read recently that thousands of women were surveyed and asked what they want most in a man, I guess, to marry. The most important thing to women was they wanted a man with a good sense of humor. Second was they wanted a man who regarded women as an equal, a woman as an equal. Third, they wanted a man who loved children. Last place, with only 4% response, was they wanted a man who was attractive physically. Now, I'll tell you that men are somewhat different than women as far as our motivation list, what we're looking for. But I can tell you that no man wants to be very long with a woman who's not pleasant to be with. The Bible says in Proverbs 19:13, in the Living, "A nagging wife annoys like constant dripping." And I will assure you that a nagging secretary or a nagging boss annoys in the same way. So I want a secretary with a pleasant personality. Second, I want a secretary, Barb mentioned this, who's loyal to me. Now, I need to always merit her trust and her loyalty, but I want her to be loyal to me. Because, you know, more than anyone except for my wife and maybe my closest friends, she knows more about me than anybody. And she could hurt me. She knows where I spend my time. She knows how much money I make, where I spend my money. She knows when I'm in town, when I'm out of town, who I'm with. She knows what I'm thinking most of the time because she types my letters. She overhears a lot of my phone calls. She knows who I'm meeting with. So I've got to have a secretary who's intensely loyal to me. But this brings up another problem. My desire for her to be loyal to me should never cause her to have to compromise her integrity. A boss should never ask his secretary to lie for him. You know, it's small things like, for instance, the boss says, hey, if it's so-and-so, tell him I'm not here. Now, I'll be walking out the door to go to lunch, and the phone rings, and she'll say, Kirk, phone call, and if I can't stop, instead of saying, tell him I'm not here, I should say, tell him I'm walking out the door to go to lunch, and I'll talk to him later. Now, they'll accept the truth, but don't even get started on little lies, because your integrity is not worth it. For a paycheck or for promotion or for the favor of your boss, it's just not worth it. So I expect loyalty, but not at the expense of integrity. Another part of loyalty is I expect her to keep things confidential. She knows all this information, and I expect for her to keep her mouth shut. I expect a secretary, another part of the right attitude, is I expect a secretary who studies me and learns my idiosyncrasies and learns how to work me best. I expect for her to fill in the blanks where I'm short. I expect for her to be strong in those areas. And then I expect a secretary who does quality work. I want her to get it right before she brings it to me. Colossians 3, 23 and 24 says, work hard and cheerfully at all you do, just as though you were working for the Lord, and not merely for your masters, remembering that it is the Lord Christ who is going to pay you. You're really working for Him. I took a trip to Disney World in 1978, and it changed my business career because I noticed that the people there were well-dressed, they were clean, they had smiles on their face. When someone dropped a piece of paper on the floor almost before it hit the ground, someone came along and swept it up. And I learned that people will be exactly what I expect them to be. If I expect them to be to work in a sloppy office, then we'll have a sloppy office. If I expect a neat office, that's what we'll have. If I expect letters to be brought to me with no typos on it, then that's what I get. Now, this is in the days before word processing, so what I started doing is I started, when my secretary would bring me a letter and it had a typed over or misspelled word or whatever, I would just make the correction right on the letter in red ink. And so she had to retype the whole thing. And she learned real quick that don't bring it to me if there's anything wrong with it. Charles Dickens was asked what the secret of his success is, and he said that whatever I've tried to do in my life, I've tried with all my heart to do it well. Whatever I've devoted myself to, I've devoted myself to it completely. And I need a secretary who's absolutely devoted to doing quality work. A friend told me, if you don't have the time to do it right, when are you going to have the time to do it over? Well, in concluding, let me say that I hope you're in a job where you love your work. I hope you're in a job where your aptitude is right for the job and where your attitude is right. Ecclesiastes 5:20 says, to enjoy your work and to accept your lot in life, that is indeed a gift from God. The person who does that will not need to look back with sorrow on his past, for God gives him joy. Now, I hope you're in that kind of a job. If you don't have a job like that, I'd encourage you to get one. And I've got to say, I'm not always what I should be in a boss, and you're probably not always what you should be as a secretary. I'm sure that I'm not always as personable as my secretary would like for me to be. So preparing this talk's been a good reminder. But how about you? If your boss is not all he should be, maybe there's something you can do about it. Maybe you could first check your attitude and make sure that it's all it should be. Second, maybe you could pray for your boss that God would point out to him, not through you, the areas he needs to change in. And I just encourage you to trust God in that area. And just be aware that God is aware of the circumstances in your life. And He can change things when He wants to. The attitude with which you approach your work makes all the difference in the world. Now, I've been to Europe a couple of times, and I've been able to see some of the paintings and sculptures of Michelangelo. I've seen his sculpture of David in Florence. And without a doubt, he's the greatest sculptor of all time. But even though Michelangelo's works have inspired mankind for 400 years, he was never satisfied with his work, never completely satisfied. After he completed his sculpture of Moses, which many believe was his greatest work of all time, He looked at it, and then suddenly in anger, he took his chisel and hit the knee of the statue of Moses and said, "Why do you not speak?" And this was a guy who wanted to take cold, hard marble and make it come to life. And he wasn't satisfied until he did it. And if today, if you go and look at the statue of Moses, you can still see on his knee a long, narrow dent made by that chisel. It's basically Michelangelo's trademark, the trademark of a man who never saw his dreams of perfection come to reality. But it's also a symbol of the fact that men become mastered by attempting the impossible, by never becoming satisfied with their efforts. And, you know, it's been said that little men or little women little men and little women are the only ones who are ever satisfied with their accomplishments, and that's why they remain little. But great men and great women are never satisfied with their accomplishments, and that's why they become great. As the Bible says, work hard and cheerfully at all you do, just as though you're working for the Lord and not merely for your masters or your pastors, remembering that it is the Lord Christ who is going to pay you. He's the one you're really working for. Let's pray. Father, I thank you that you care about our work. I thank you that you care about us as individuals. Lord, I know you didn't design us accidentally. You gave us the gifts that we have and the motivations that we have so that we can be in a job where we can really be vitally involved in what that job's about. And for those of us who are in that type of job, God, we give you thanks. And for those of us who are not, we just ask that you'd show us what that job might be. Lord, I pray that you'd help each of us to check our attitudes about our job, about the people we work with and for. And God, give us the mindset that we really aren't serving the church or serving the pastor or serving that boss, but we're really serving you. And our ultimate reward really comes from you. In Jesus' name, amen.